AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
The Hard Shoulder, with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
There's lots of discussion at the moment around left and right wing politics. But what do those definitions really mean? And what about the voters who are left in the middle, who don't identify with either side particularly? Well, to chat to me about this in more detail, I am now joined by Kevin Cunningham, lecturer in politics at TU Dublin, and Dr. Graeme Finlay, assistant professor in the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD. You're both very welcome to the programme. Kevin, can I start with you? Do Irish people really think in terms of left versus right?
Yeah, it's interesting. So a lot of people would define themselves as being in the centre or not sure. If you try to force people into left and right, a lot of people kind of protest at that. Principally, the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael voters would be much more likely to find themselves as being in the centre. I think there's a little bit of a difference between the left and the rest in terms of Irish politics, that most people in Ireland who define themselves as being on the left are very clearly voting for left-wing political parties. Whereas a lot of people who are Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and in the centre are almost defining themselves as being not left, if anything. But the left and right thing overall, I mean, this is essentially, from what we understand, this underlying psychological predisposition that people seem to have, that when someone is particularly, let's say, against climate action, they tend to be anti-immigrant as well, or vice versa. There is these correlations that people tend to have. Now, obviously, there's a centre, but there is correlations that people tend to have in terms of their underlying predispositions. That's largely as a result of experiences in their lives, in terms of socialization, in terms of family, or indeed increasingly social media, the types of people that are around, and other effects in terms of the overall material interest that they might have. So you might have the very fact that left-wing politics tends to favour people on lower incomes, it tends to be about reducing inequality, and naturally as a result, younger people, people in lower socioeconomic grades tend to be much more attracted to that.
I mean, in Ireland, we kind of have a spectrum of parties on the left, People Before Profit, Labour, Sock Dems and Sinn Féin, and then you talk about the parties in the centre, which you say are Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Why are there so few on that right-hand side?
Yeah, I think it's the nature of political competition in some way. So historically, sometimes the parties converge to where they perceive to be the centre ground of the voter. In Ireland, that particular centre ground, certainly relative to other European countries, tends to be a little bit towards the centre left. In other countries, that's shifted a little bit more towards the right. And naturally enough, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael over time has shifted towards that centre-left position. And we can look at very obvious examples of the recent referendums on abortion and same-sex marriage to show how, in fact, the Irish voter does tend to be a little bit towards the left.
Especially, so on social issues, even those sort of centre-right parties have drifted left. What about economic issues?
Economic issues, people would often argue that Ireland is actually much more conservative. When it comes to things like corporation tax, there's general agreement that we should have a low corporation tax, even amongst political parties on the left. That would be very unusual in other countries as well. But I would say one of the interesting things about Irish politics is that that older voter, the people who are age over 60, tend to be, compared to their European neighbours, much more, say, progressive or left-leaning in a whole variety of different issues. Immigration is one of the interesting differences between the sick person who's over 60, between an Irish person who's over 60 and a British person who's over 60. Now, that might be the very fact that a lot of these people might have experienced immigration themselves, or emigrating briefly, perhaps to the UK and back, or indeed, someone might argue that the changes in perception that they might have had around the Catholic Church, a lot of people would have grown up with the relatively influential Catholic Church, and then obviously that rapidly changed throughout the 80s and 90s. Whether it's historical reasons or otherwise, we do tend to have a slightly left-leaning overall population, and a lot of this is down to the older population being a little bit different from the rest of their European counterparts.
Is there also sort of the strength of the opposition in the country, and the fact that the opposition for so long has been left-wing, and that in answering to the opposition, those centre-right parties have had to shift over?
Yeah, it is very interesting. Like, if you were to go back to the 50s and 60s and even the 70s, any post-war European country, the centre-left would have been on between 30 and 40%. In Ireland, historically speaking, we only really had the Labour Party on around 13 or 14%. We were a complete outlier in European demographic democracies in terms of the relative weaknesses of the left. And then obviously over time, we've never had a left-led government, unlike all these other democracies. And so perhaps for that reason, we have this increasing unified left, for which they can also hold the mantle of this prospect of change. If you go back to the 2020 election in particular, one of the biggest reasons why people were voting for Sinn Féin was because of this prospect of change. And the fact that change is very associated with the left, I think has helped in Ireland that kind of consolidation of a relatively strong left-wing opposition.
Graham, you've said before that the left-right distinction might need rethinking. Listening to what Kevin was saying there, do you think it's too simplistic for how people actually think about issues today?
I mean, I think Kevin gave about as good an account of how that might apply to the Irish context as can be done. And there is clearly, you know, a sense that right wing still involves a certain kind of social conservatism and perhaps a reluctance to spend government money on services. But and the left wing is for more liberal policies and more government investment in the economy. That distinction is sort of held up. But I think the rise of populism recently in a number of countries and perhaps in Ireland, it's associated with the left, with Sinn Féin, rather than with any really powerful or even existing right wing populist party. Populism kind of screws this up because whether it's Donald Trump or Marine Le Pen, they're all in favor of quite heavy investment in spending money on their supporters. And they're not particularly interested in fiscal conservatism. Now, they are pretty invested in conservative values, which have taken on, you know, a quite strong form, which harks back to the original distinction between left and right, which is where people sat in the various assemblies surrounding the French Revolution. The aristocrats, you know, defenders of hierarchy, defenders of the established order on the right, and the liberal, the common people who wanted a career open to the talents and some kind of democratic equality on the left. You know, that order, you know, seems to be something we're getting back to as we see genuinely reactionary elements entering into the politics of a number of countries. Not quite so much in Ireland, maybe because of our recent experience of a very reactionary Catholic Church, but nevertheless, a church which had a number of people very, very committed to left-wing social progress in terms of a concern for the poor. So I think maybe we're an outlier because of our peculiar history. That and the revolutionary tradition allows us, you know, has allowed the Irish left to really claim a place at the center of the spectrum.
Do you think is it important for parties to identify themselves as left and right?
I think it is helpful. I mean, I think we saw in the last presidential election a coalition of self-identified left-wing parties putting aside their very real differences. I mean, I think when we see them compete against each other in general elections or local elections, things can get quite vicious. These sort of small differences in terms of what constitutes progress and who's standing in the way of it. But yeah, I mean, it's important for a unified left, obviously, to have that kind of success. I think personally, it can be less helpful in sort of dealing with each other. And one of the things we've seen in the polarization, which is to some extent driven by social media, is this visceral identification with the right or the left, where, as Kevin says, people start seeing all the issues of their team as ones they have to sign up for and really despising the other people simply for disagreeing with them about basic political issues.
I mean, I know you have spoken, Kevin, haven't you, about social media, and it seems to be really intensifying political engagement, particularly at the extremes.
Yeah, exactly. As Graham said, there's an idea called affective polarization, which is essentially the idea that it's not just that you are identifying with the right or the left, but rather your identity is more opposed to that of the other identity. So a lot of people who might identify as being on the right are really identifying as being extremely anti the left. And that seems to be driving quite a lot of that. But in terms of the role of social media, some of the research which points to this idea of filter bubbles and the amount that people are consuming seems to suggest that it's not as much about what they're consuming, but rather the volumes that they are actually consuming. Some of the literature, earlier literature, kind of pointed to the idea that there were, that if you're consuming a certain type of media, then you would more likely to drift over to the right. But what they found is that the more someone who might be on a right-leaning perspective start to even consume left-leaning material online, they actually shifted even further to the right. So it's like it wasn't necessarily bringing people back to the centre, but it was just the sheer volumes and the amount of hours people are spending seems to be heavily correlated towards the further people are away from the centre ground of politics.
So where does it leave, Graeme, those people in the middle, which at one point was the majority of people in Ireland?
Well, I think it's really important for people on either side of the spectrum to realize that those are the voters you need to appeal to if you want to actually govern. And it's not always been clear that some people in politics want to appeal to those voters or maybe want to govern on the terms which those voters would let them. So I think the biggest lesson from this is to not let our online behavior or the behavior of people online spill over into the real world. I mean, I think a lot of people, if they behaved the way they did online, behaved offline, they'd be pariahs and shunned by society. And I think if you actually meet someone you disagree with, you know, there are some deal breakers for a lot of people, but it's most important to have an actual dialogue and listen to each other. I mean, I always tell my classes, you know, this is a political theory class. We can argue anything, but we're not going to learn anything. We're not going to have a real dialogue without the respect for each other, without which learning is impossible. So I think in the real world, the more chance people have to meet, discuss things, you know, in a robust way, but in a respectful way, hopefully can dampen down some of this, polarization, which Kevin described.
And the polarization which you talk about can actually lead to something that I found quite entertaining, which is this horseshoe theory that you talk about.
Yeah, I'm really getting tired of horseshoe theory. When I was in high school, which was a long time ago, and there were actually existing totalitarianisms, you know, in two superpowers. I mean, there's still totalitarian states around the world, and we don't have to look far to find them. But, you know, yes, both fascism and communism are presented as if they had all the same characteristics in terms of control of the media, in terms of, you know, strong ideologies and so forth. But I think that's just really not helpful in the sense that if you look at what totalitarian regimes like, say, Cuba do, if they're a left-wing totalitarian regime, they are going to repress people's freedom of speech. There are political prisoners in Cuba and so forth. But they're going to invest their focus on free healthcare for everybody, a certain kind of egalitarian approach to organizing society, control of the means of production, and so forth. Whereas if you're a right totalitarianism, as we've seen in some other Latin American regimes in the past, they're not going to have the same concern for the poor. And they're going to have a much more hierarchical society, which values the military, traditionalist cultural institutions, and so forth. So in the actual details, I don't think classing them all together is very helpful.
Okay. To go back to you, Kevin, the support for the left, as you say, is rising in this country. And you say that's perhaps because it's the politics of change, which can be very attractive to people. But the radical right are the most engaged sometimes. So is there a gap in Irish politics now? And do you think that gap is going to be filled on that centre right, far right?
Yeah, I think one of the things about the Irish system is that because we're one of the few countries not to have a very significant radical right political party, we're also one of the very few countries to also have a large number of people who are independents in our Dáil getting elected. There's a very strong correlation between the types of people who would otherwise vote for independent candidates who might in another jurisdiction vote for a radical right. And it reflects their attitudes in relation to issues like immigration, but also an idea of wanting things being protected towards their local area and focusing very much in that local jurisdiction, essentially. But in terms of the gap in the market, I think one of the things that we've seen in a lot of European countries is that the people who are most engaged tend to be people who are on the radical right. And one of the evidential points recently is obviously the presidential election, where we had a relatively large number of spoiled votes, 13% of people spoiled their vote. Now, if you look at the demographics and the attitudes of those types of voters, not saying that every one of those people would have otherwise been a radical right supporter, but they seem to be certainly to the right of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And a lot of them would have been preferred to have the likes of Maria Steen as their candidate, essentially. It suggests to me the very fact that they spoiled their vote, they got out and voted, even though there was no candidate, it reflects the relative motivation that they had. And even if you go back to the general election itself, the biggest lift in support for a given voter bloc was actually independents and other right-wing parties. And the reason why that's particularly interesting, it wasn't necessarily part of the narrative because they weren't able to convert those votes into seats, which then obviously meant subsequently they weren't able to get enough people in the Oireachtas to nominate someone for the presidential election. So there's very much a vote there. It seems like
nobody's quite figured out how to capitalise on it.
Well, it seems like the centre-right Fine Gael are trying to attract it. But what's happened in some countries is that initially it seems to damage the centre-left because you'll find these working-class voters tend to be attracted to it initially. But in the long run, in many jurisdictions, what they do seem to cannibalise is the centre-right political parties. You've seen the complete evaporation of the centre-right in the UK, in France, and many other jurisdictions at the end of the day. And you have these new polarised politics where it's kind of a radical right versus a kind of greeny liberal kind of voter.
Okay, so a word of warning there. Kevin Cunningham and Dr. Graham Finlay, thanks so much for joining me on The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.